Welcome to this week's Casterbris Podcast with a K, available on Casterbris, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the podcast with a K. Joining me, Christian Corley, is my good friend and podcasting colleague, Brian Terranova. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
Hello there. We're not doing a commentary this week, are we?
Not this week.
Not this week, no. We might. I mean, we're probably commentating on the podcast as we record the podcast in our heads.
Fair enough. And I could actually just do a running commentary while you're speaking, if you like.
That would be cool, wouldn't it? Or maybe not so cool, but it would be different. But on the other hand, isn't everything we do a commentary, really?
Yeah, fair enough. I would go with that.
Some level of commentary to everything we do. I mean, for instance, the potential for ex-EastEnders star Rocky Thakra to join Doctor Who. That's been a lot of people have been teasing there. Although...
Lots of excitement over there at Hawley Towers.
yes, guest star Bruce Corley there. She's said to this is Rocky Thakra, who was in EastEnders as a Shabnam, which apparently she was in there for 12 months. Every time I passed EastEnders in the room, it was basically her sulking. So apparently it was quite a sad. They had a stillborn baby storyline. I'm pretty sure the sulking started before the pregnancy, though, or before the birth. Anyway, she says. Speaking to the RadioTimes.com, that well, not much really. She's basically saying that it might. She's got something coming up, with, and she doesn't really want to. It could be interesting. It could not be interesting. The usual non-committal stuff of actors. Capaldi remained tight-lipped back in January. He said we've just had some brief talks about it. We haven't actually chosen someone yet, that I know of. I would expect that I would meet them before we finalised all that. We're looking for someone different. So, you know, there's nothing really new under the sun with regards to the Doctor Who companion casting. I think there was something, someone said that she would be quite a different companion who wouldn't be in awe of the Doctor. I'm not sure if that was Capaldi or Moffat who said that. Did you see that?
I've been hoping that for years, but no, I did not see that.
But that, to me, that's not particularly different to Martha or Donna, so...
Well, Martha was in all of the Doctor. That was the whole storyline, the whole unrequited love story.
Yeah, I suppose, though. I suppose.
Yeah, Donna was the only one who... Although, I mean, look, okay, Donna was a friend,
or
but
maybe
she was
I mean
still
Clara.
In all of him.
Maybe I
you
actually
know what
mean,
I mean
Clara. Clara wasn't in all of the Doctor, was she?
Yeah, that's a tough call, you know what I mean? Because, like, until she got Danny, it was kind of like, okay, well, she was all about the Doctor, even though she pretended not to be about the Doctor. It was supposed to be a, you know, a finger quotes friend relationship. But then she got Danny, and it was like, okay, now she's got Danny. But then she had to juggle that life with her and the Doctor. And then they even made, like, the closing moments kind of be like, you know, there was still a love relationship there. And it's like, I don't know, I think it would really be nice to, if you're going to get away from it, actually get away from it. Rather than say you're going to get away from it and hope nobody notices that you didn't.
Would you?
Would I notice? Yes. What?
No, would you, if you were invited into a time machine, be desperate to get back to work?
No.
Hmm.
No, if I were invited into the time machine with a doctor, admittedly, I might be a bit desperate to go find some of my friends. But I would not feel the need to go back to my work. I would feel like I'm escaping life. And granted, you know, like there's a sense of responsibility. You have to sit there and say, you know, at some point this is going to end with this guy. I can't travel with him forever. I need to pay bills. I need to not be in debt. So, I mean, perhaps there's a part of you that would be realistic and say, hey, this is fun, but like, you know, can't we do this on like Tuesday nights or something like that? You know, I get that aspect of it, but I don't know. I think if you were introduced to this whole new lifestyle, I look at it in many ways as I do like I don't know the TV show Farscape or well, that's actually probably the perfect example. The man is thrust into a completely different galaxy, And instead of going back to his science and his astronaut lifestyle kind of thing, he's stuck living in that world. And I think like it's so much more fun. I mean, he's got to work still. He's got to work for food. He's got to work to make friends. He's got to work to fight the bad guys and so on. But it's not the monotonous lifestyle of going to your crappy job every day. You know, it would be an interesting change. So getting into the TARDIS with the Doctor and going to alien planet after alien planet, especially since, you know, what a lot of fans or a lot of outsiders sometimes don't realize is it's not always death and destruction as they make it out to be. Even the companions try and tell the Doctor, you know, there are days like, you know, Sarah Jane was throwing on a bikini and grabbing a beach ball, and her and Romana and the Doctor have all headed to the beach at some time just to hang out, you know, some alien planet or Earth, you know. And it's not always going to be that way, and it would be fun, but it would just be incredible because I like to travel, and I think that there's probably nothing more interesting than going someplace that no human has ever been before. So no, I would think work would be the last thing on my list to think about.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. But there you go, Clara, impossible girl in many ways. Listen, I do feel compelled to talk about this.
Go on.
About an article that was published on April the 2nd on a website called www.casterbarus.com,
Right.
which apparently I wrote. It says here that I wrote it. I didn't write it. The title of the article is Why a Doctor Who Slot Machine Makes Sense. Now, I'm not going to go too much into this because emails have been sent to various people. But I do want the readers now. I want to thank everyone who got in touch with me, including Brian here, also emailed me about this. I'd like everyone to know that I didn't write this article. I have absolutely no interest in promoting slot machines of Doctor Who or any other kind. I personally don't think that Casterbridge is the right place to be promoting gambling, and that's basically what we're talking about here, gambling. And yeah, so that's this is completely nothing to do with me, and I've requested that my name be taken off the article. It hasn't happened as yet. If you feel so compelled, feel free to contact She Knows Media, who now own Casterbridge. It would be nice to get a few emails from readers in their direction. They're certainly not responding to my tweets and emails so far. So that's that out of the way. Little bit of grief, but you know. We were talking before the podcast, Brian and I, dear listener, about what we'd be talking about. And we're talking about what we will talk about in the podcast. And one of the things was spin-offs. And obviously it's struck us that, although in a completely non-consequential way, we didn't sort of put two and two together, so it just happened in my brain just now, that the cast for Doctor Who spin-off Class has been announced. That was last week. I'm whelmed. I'm probably just whelmed. I'm not underwhelmed because Kathryn Kelly's been cast, so she's quite a popular actress these days. She's been in the Mr. Selfridge series on ITV. She was in Coronation Street for some years before that, and she always seems to be a good actress. So the fact that she's in there, that's interesting. But yeah, I consider myself to be well and truly whelmed by that news. Other cast is exciting new talents: Greg Austin, Fady El-Sayed, Sophie Hopkins, and Vivian Opera. No mention of William Russell at Coal Hill School.
I also noticed that the kids at Coal Hill School, probably Screw, have grown up quite a bit. You know,
yeah,
they're not exactly the kids that we've seen in the previous.
There's a bit of stubble going on in there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a bit of height, muscle. I don't know. I would say puberty.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It looks like they're trying.
Maybe it's
but
sixth
I don't
form
know.
As well. A lot of schools in the UK go to 18 now.
Okay.
Didn't
Why?
Used to be either way, but.
Why do they spend that time to show us Coal Hill School and show all those young kids and then say, hey, guess what, everybody, we're going to do a spin-off for Coal Hill School, and then not give us anything we've seen before?
Yeah, a bit strange.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like it was a natural spin-off waiting to happen, like how Sarah Jane kind of felt and how Torchwood felt, you
They
know?
could be teachers.
Yeah, could be. Well, not the one in the overalls. I can't imagine going to school teaching in a pair of overalls.
Art teacher?
Maybe.
Maybe.
No, I'm not feeling it.
Okay.
I'm not feeling it.
Okay. I'm not feeling any of it, to be honest with
No.
you. I mean, it could be argued that it's not aimed at me, but then Torchwood wasn't aimed at me either, and I was, feeling a bit of Torchwood. Sarah Jane Adventures certainly weren't aimed at me, and yet. So, yeah. Okay. So that's a spin-off that's coming. That's a spin-off that is actually happening, that's in production, etc. I wonder though. Wow,
Wow.
that was such a good link, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, go on.
I wonder though, dear listener, is there any spin-offs, Doctor Who spin-offs, that you would have liked to have seen that didn't occur? What about you, Brian?
I always wanted the Romana spin-off.
All right.
Yeah, but whenever I first saw Warrior's Gate, I kind of like there was just this natural feeling that, you know, she wasn't just a companion that was leaving. You know, she was a companion that was quite literally off to do better things. You know, they usually left you with a, hey, the companions have left, their lives are enriched, and you know, hopefully they're going to be better. But Romana was off; she had a purpose, and it kind of felt so natural. Especially, you know, K-9's telling her he has plans for how to make a TARDIS. You know, she's got K-9, and there's a goal; they're going to free Burok's people. You know, and it was just like that to me. To this day, I would still like to see, and I know that there have been a few unlicensed radio dramas about that, which were fun to hear, and they were years later, probably 80s, maybe 90s, I don't recall, probably 90s, I would think. But yeah, that's a big one. I still would have liked to have seen. She's someone I would love to see come back to the new series too.
How would you think they would have built a TARDIS, her and K9?
You know, I don't really think that's necessarily the important part. I think basically what I would have liked to have seen now, especially since, you know, you get that TARDISes are grown in the new series. Who knows what they would have done in the 80s, you know? I think what I would have liked to have seen was that we pick up their adventures. It's maybe like a couple months they're there, you know, and we see her TARDIS, and maybe it's just a box, just a regular old box. It hasn't learned how to change shape yet. You know, it hasn't, it's still a baby kind of ship, because there was always a bit of an organic quality to the ship. There was always, in the sense that, you know, it was always alive. It had a personality, you know. So I would always, you know, I'd like to see her TARDIS kind of being in like an infant kind of stage. So maybe it couldn't do exactly what the doctors could do yet. But, you know, throughout the life of the series, it would grow, it would get there. But not only that, I thought it would have been really neat when you get in and like maybe, you know, she's saving somebody, maybe her companion, you know, outside of K-9. You know, they get in the TARDIS for the first time and they see the console room. Maybe it's different. Maybe it's still kind of like underdeveloped, but like still impressive and neat, you know. And then just to see that reaction, we're like, oh my God, it's bigger on the out on the inside, you know. And like, yeah, and then like, well, how much bigger is it? Oh well, right now it's just this room. It's kind of still growing. You know, like something like that would be neat, because then you could sit there, you could think, how cool is that? Like we can look forward to this ship getting bigger and badder during the course of this show. So yeah, that's what I would have liked to have seen, rather than like actually seeing the technical side of how they were able to do it, just knowing that K-9 took that information somehow from the actual TARDIS and was able to make it happen in eSpace and have her have her own adventures. That would have been great. What
Okay.
about you?
Oh, well, I don't know really. I suppose there's the Sarah Jane one, which is obvious, but she got one eventually, so we can move on from that. The unit one.
Okay, sure.
The unit spin-off, I think that could have been really, really good.
Yeah, that would have been good.
I mean, they've done it on audio, haven't they? And that's proved to be quite reasonably good, I suppose. I think with TV and with I mean, if they did it in the 70s, then you've got CSO, you've got the potential for the Doctor popping up occasionally, maybe out of sync, maybe. I mean, they could have done it in the 80s or 90s and given John Pertwee something to do.
Oh, right, okay.
Possibly, maybe. I know it wasn't really Doctor Who's time in the late 80s and throughout most of the 90s, so that really wouldn't have probably happened. But there's so much they could have done with that, and maybe keep it to the mad scientists and leave the alien invasions to the doctors, because when you start taking the alien invasions away from the doctor, he kind of reduces the doctor's strength somewhat, doesn't it?
That's always the issue with not only spin-offs, but as I always say, prequels. You always want to tell stories that are bigger and better than what came before.
Yeah.
And if you do that, and if you do it in a story without the doctor, then the doctor sort of becomes redundant. If humans can start taking care of themselves, what do you need him for? What's the big buildup for him? But also, if you tell a prequel story of certain characters and you do like the biggest, grandest story you can do, then it makes some of the things that the earlier doctors did to stop alien invasions, which were, you know, small in comparison to something that the later doctors did, you know, but you said it as like an early first doctor story somehow. It just doesn't jive. You know, you can't have them using the knowledge that they had in the later years in the beginning, because then it doesn't make sense. And that's where things start to fall apart for me. So if you were to do a unit series, I agree, you would have to kind of keep it on a definite smaller scale. Maybe kind of, it's probably a bad example to bring up, but that Friday the 13th TV show, where, or probably, well, it's probably even more apt to Warehouse 13, which they had over here. And I haven't watched Warehouse 13, but the Friday the 13th TV show and Warehouse 13 were kind of the same basic premise. Basically, they both dealt with an archive of paranormal items that were kind of being used or abused. So basically, picture, and I think Torchwood may have even done a little bit about this, but picture UNIT in the new series. They have the Black Archive with all those alien artifacts in there. Mm-hmm. But imagine that either someone from our own government or some outside influence, possibly even some aliens, were using some of the technology that was in that archive, and UNIT had to recover those pieces, had to stop the threat and recover those pieces. You could do that on a much smaller scale, because then you only have, you're either fighting humans using alien technology, or you're fighting aliens on a smaller scale that maybe aren't threatening the entire planet or the universe, is what happens every day in the new series now. And then it works. There's a purpose. Basically, they're collecting things that either they've lost, that they've had in storage, that the doctor already dealt with, you know, that or should have, like in Untold Stories, would have already dealt with these things. This way you don't have to worry about them getting too grand. And then, of course, you can have the doctor pop in occasionally, like they did with Sarah Jane. And you don't have to do it like every damn episode, but one a season or one every other season even would be a fun little thing like that. Hmm. And it would be a great way to introduce or reintroduce past doctors to new fans, because it probably would be a great spin-off show to throw them in the mix. This way you're not always having to rely on the doctor that's currently in the new series. You can bring a past one out, dust them off, and put them in the show. And maybe people should stop worrying about, well, they look older, they look fatter, they look grayer. Who the hell cares? It's the doctor. Let them have an adventure. Enjoy it. That's what you're supposed to do. You know?
I like the imagery of dusting them off as if they've been kept in a cupboard, gathering cobwebs, just waiting.
Yeah, well, they're not. I think they are.
Waiting for the call.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What about monster spin-offs? Because we've always had Dalek Empire from Big Finish. And you know, Dalek spin-offs have been around nearly as long as Doctor Who, with the comic book spin-offs originally by Terrination, and was it Spooner as well? I can't quite recall.
Was it?
And you had the Dalek strip in TV21 and Action.
That sort
of stuff. So what was it? And there's the Cyberman spin-offs, isn't there? And the Gallifrey spin-offs on Big Finish.
I don't think I would like to see a Gallifrey spin-off. And I think we spoke about this before, basically, with me and Gallifrey, where I don't think it's ever been quite as cool as it was in the War Games.
No.
It just never had that mystery anymore to it. And no matter when, like, not even the new series was able to pull the mystery back. They basically just made them Earth bureaucrats and made it boring.
Yeah. Which works once, but if you keep going back to that again and again and again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it makes you wonder, once you see the Time Lords with our bureaucracy and our mentality, why does the Doctor like Earth so much if he left a planet like that? You know, why would he come to Earth and go, yeah, this is my home? Why wouldn't he sit here and especially go, oh, God, you're just like my people?
Especially when you consider the Third Doctor in particular, who seems to have spent his time in sort of gentlemen's clubs and things like that, which is essentially the world of the Deadly Assassin, isn't it?
Yep, yeah. So yeah, exactly. So they would, if they were to do a Gallifrey series, they would have to make it otherworldly and interesting. But the problem is you would lose half of the audience because most people wouldn't be able to relate to them. So what you would need is somehow humans to interact with them, which leads me to my next thing where I think, and I can't really get another alien species that I think a series would work well with, but I think number one, the Dalek spin-off series could work tremendously, and number two, Cybermen, because what you'd have to do is you'd have to build a team of humans or aliens, or human and alien mix probably, that are fighting a war against Daleks. And picture it like Battlestar Galactica, the new series Battlestar Galactica. You would focus on this, the desperation of this human army, this human military, this human society that is being constantly at battle with the Daleks, and you would basically tell it in epic form rather than, here's the Daleks' plan to attack Earth this week. It would be this constant ongoing struggle to stop these creatures that just won't stop at any cost, and you have to find that way to make them. Same thing with the Cybermen, because it would be it would perhaps Daleks would probably work better for me because Cybermen, technically you've already had them being done as the Borg in Star Trek and the replicators in Stargate SG-1. That mentality of, they copy, they replicate, kind of thing, or they assimilate. So I would probably rather see the Daleks, but I think there's potential if you wanted to maybe set an alien, not alien, a human society in the future. Because you couldn't do it with UNIT now, because we'd run into that same issue of them not needing the doctor anymore. But you have this human military, this human society that has weapons and intelligence and computers enough to battle these things. And you probably could do a season-long arc of Daleks, a season-long arc of Cybermen, a season-long arc of maybe the Santarans or something like that. Or even if it's the Santarans, put the Rutans in there or put another alien race in there and make it a little interesting, But I mean, picture it. Like with Daleks, you could have Dalek replicants that are infiltrating the humans. It would be very much like Battlestar Galactica now that I think about it. But it would be in a Doctor Who realm that Doctor Who fans could enjoy it. If Battlestar wasn't quite their thing, it would be in their universe.
Rootin' tootin'.
Mm.
Rootins. What about, because I like that idea, but again, even if it is set in the future, there's still kind of devaluing of the Doctor. So what about a series which isn't Doctor Who, but is a Doctor Who spin-off? And I know what the answer is to this. And then the Doctor turns up at the end to fix everything. But what that brings is devaluing the previous X number of weeks, doesn't it? Because you think that these guys are going to somehow overcome it, and then some guy comes in, basically we turn the dots into the Deus Ex Machina, that quick, well, maybe not the Deus Ex Machina, but something that hasn't been referenced previously, like we haven't seen, the gun lying around or whatever, and then he turns
Okay.
into the smoking gun.
Well, if you handle it right, if you handle it well, if you think about it, the doctor is always kind of coming in where people are having lengthy battles or struggles with the creature, and they're holding their own so far. You have to imagine, like, trying to find a good Dalek story example, but let's just take a base scenario. You have a base under siege. Daleks are there, and you have humans kind of holding their own against these Daleks for days, maybe weeks, and they're doing well. They're not doing so bad, but eventually they're going to be overcome because there's no fatigue on the side of the Daleks, they don't really have the limited resources that we may have and whatnot. So if you tell the story well, you could tell the story that we don't get to see in Doctor Who, what it was like for these people before the Doctor showed up. You could see the small victories, you could see the small advantages that they have, and you could even make the Doctor allude to that when he gets there, that like, you guys did this, you won that battle, this battle, you did that, I came in at the end, I helped you with this big, boulder basically at the end, but if you guys didn't move the rubble before I got here, I'm not sure how this would have gone. So you could have it both ways where, you don't devalue the doctor's presence or need by having him come in at the end, but then, how long can you do that? You can't sustain it. It would essentially have to be an event series rather than a full spin-off series because you can't do every season where the doctor comes in and cleans up the mess. Either that or else you'd have to learn to tell smaller stories. But I can see as an event series that working where you basically get to see the struggle that humans face and how well we would face the odds on our own but when the chips are down, we still need him, or even it would be interesting if he came in the end as kind of like a cameo and they saved the day, and maybe they're thanking him and he's like, look, I just got here. You guys did this. And it would be a testament to humans that kind of like, hey, maybe you're growing up. Maybe you don't need me right now or for this one or whatever. There's interesting ways to twist it. Lots of merit there, I think.
Okay.
I will say one thing about before we get off spinoffs and Sarah Jane in particular. Personally, and I know we spoke about this before, so I won't beat on this, but Sarah Jane, as it was marketed to children, I felt was the wrong way to go. I feel like Doctor Who was a family show. Sarah Jane started in that family show, and I feel they could have told Sarah Jane as a family show and marketed it to all of us, and we would have still watched, and kids would have still watched, and still would have taken a lot from it. That said, Big Finish had done their own Sarah Jane spinoff prior to the BBC doing their TV show, and I have to say Big Finish's format was much better, much more interesting. Mm-hmm. So it would have been lovely to have seen that become a show versus what actually did. And not to devalue it, because I enjoyed her show for what it was. I love her, and there were some good stories in there, but I think it would have been a better format if they went with the Big Finish setup.
So, dear listener, if you've any spin-off ideas from Doctor Who's 50 plus years, do let us know what they are. Perhaps you like the idea of a story about an entire series of the Brigadier leaving unit and going to become a teacher. Or Professor Chronitis doing his Chronotis, even, because I made it sound like he's got some sort of infection there, didn't I? Professor Chronotis, his adventures in at Cambridge, all that sort of thing. Anything like that. It's recovering from Chronotis.
There could be a spin-off series, I don't know, of Ian Chesterton at a school that he teaches at.
Oh wow, it's amazing.
Yeah,
what at Coal Hill?
Yeah,
Oh, well, what would you call something like that, though?
Oh man, I don't know. What is he teaches? He teaches a class? He teaches a class. He's got
Could call it form.
Could.
Or
could.
Tutor group.
You could call it Ian Chesterton's badassery.
Ian Chesterton's. I've turned into the Doctor. I can't get his name right. Chesterfield's World of Adventure.
There you
Chessington
are.
World of Adventure.
Don't even change that. That's brilliant. I love that. Oh my god, that would be great.
Chessington World of Adventure is an actual place.
Is it really?
It's a theme park in the UK. Or it used to be. I don't know if it's still there, but yeah. Okay, so that's spin-offs. Listen, do you know what? There's some news that we've overlooked.
Go on.
One of them's just from today. And that is, there's a trailer for The Crown, which is set to be released on Friday, 4th of November. This is on Netflix. This is Matt Smith as Prince Philip. And Claire Foy as Elizabeth II, following the history of the Queen's reign through political and personal turmoil. So it's got quite a good cast. It's got John Lithgow as Churchill.
Oh, wow.
And Eileen Atkins as Queen Mary, among many others. So that'll be worth taking a look at when it comes along, just to see how Matt copes with being Prince Philip, a man regularly caricatured in Britain as talking like this, with a bit of a stammer. I've never met him, so I don't know if he has a stammer or not. That's a spitting image legacy, that sort of thing for Prince Philip there. I seriously doubt that Matt Smith has approached it in that way, but you never know, do you? The other thing which popped up, which depends on how you feel about Missy, Michelle Gomez had a BAFTA nomination. She's got a Best Supporting Actress nomination.
For Missy?
For Missy, yeah.
Okay.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
See how that happens. We'll find out on May the 8th. It's the only Doctor Who nomination in the BAFTAs, I understand.
Wow.
So that's that, yeah. What do you think of that? Do you think, she's clearly very good as Missy.
Oh yeah. No, I thought she was very good and very natural. I mean, I can see why she would have the nomination, but it being the only one, is a bit sad because I certainly think that Capaldi deserved one for Heaven Sent, at least. Heaven
Yes.
Sent, is that the one he was alone?
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
You know, so at least seeing both of them would have been nice. But no, I think she's deserving. I think she did a, you know, just she did an outstanding job with the character. I think she certainly was very compelling to watch when she was on screen.
Yeah. The only reservation I have about it is that she's not really a supporting character. She's only in two episodes of the last series.
Yeah, fair enough.
Clara would be a supporting character, perhaps, or someone who is recurrent throughout the run, which would probably be Maisie Williams. I'm not going to sit here and discuss semantics with the people from BAFTA, mainly because I don't think any of them are listening.
Yeah, and if you listen to things that Moffat said, she was supposed to essentially be a supporting character for this past season, and he changed his mind. Or at least more of a recurring character.
Yeah. Okay then. Listen, someone sent me something, as happens quite regularly. And if you have anything you'd like us to discuss, dear listener, feel free to send it over to us either on Facebook or on Twitter or via email. I don't know what our email address is. What is our email address? Podcasterberus@gmail.com. There you go. That's our email address. So if you want to email us, you can. Now I got an email from Michael Herbert, who's been on the podcast, and we've interviewed him, and we've talked about him before. He's the guy who runs the Doctor Who course at Stockport, and he sent me a copy of the Birth of a Renegade story by Eric Salard from the Radio Times 20th Anniversary Edition, or 20th Anniversary Special. I beg your pardon. The story, Birth of a Renegade, is available to read on online at LiveJournal. Someone's scanned the pages from the Radio Times special and put them up there. And it's quite long. It's about 4 or 5 pages long, maybe 6 or 7 even. And it tells a story. I don't want to give too much away, but it tells a story of the Doctor, Tegan, and Turlough running into a trap set by the Master, who's trying to take control of Gallifrey. And it also gives us, and this is a bit of a spoiler, but you know, it's on encyclopedia sites, Doctor Who focused encyclopedia sites, what have you. So it also tells claims that Susan isn't really Susan. She's a an important member of Time Lord Society, basically. So I read through this. It's quite an interesting story. It's got some nice artwork as well. Now, I know Brian hasn't read it, but so I'm kind of like talking about this on my own, really. But we'll put the link in there in the show notes, so you can have a read of it yourself. It's definitely worth a read. Any observations?
You know, the only thing I was thinking, I mean, and I, of course, I have yet to read it, but I get a kick out of people wanting to put deeper meaning behind
Carry on.
behind so many characters of the past. You know, even the Doctor himself. You know, we've talked about this a lot before, how you know, we would be happy if he was quite literally just some mechanic on Gallifrey, you know, or some scientist or something that left, rather than being like a president or an omnipotent being of some sort. You know, just having him be a guy who said, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go travel. People want to put like deeper meaning behind Susan too. You know, she's a god too, or something like that. For me, there were only ever two things I wanted to see with Susan, because I like the character as she is. I don't think she needs to be anything more, and I don't think they ever showed us that she was anything more or major mystery about her. But I would have liked to have seen, number one, she just quite literally is the Doctor's granddaughter, and his escape from Gallifrey was just, hey, I want to save my family. Or number two, he left Gallifrey, to, you know, in fear of his life, you know, because he wanted to explore the universe and was afraid of getting caught, but finds this girl lost and alone, no family, you know, maybe in a war zone or something like that, took her on and just said, hey, I'm your grandfather. You know, so maybe she was just some human girl that he adopted, kind of thing. And those were like the only two things that I thought would have been really interesting, because then Susan wouldn't really even know what her past was in one case. But in another one, you know, that's not necessarily possible, because she does talk about, you know, her planet. Well, she talks about her and the Doctor's planet. And, you know, there could be a sense that maybe he found her when she was really young and there's a planet that she believes is her home. But it sounds like it's Gallifrey, you know. So honestly, those would be the only two things I need. And when it comes to both of those characters, I don't really want any more. I don't want any kind of large past for these people. I think when you make them grander than what they are, you make them way less relatable to us, and therefore it's kind of like we can never achieve those kind of things. And I know the Doctor's already up on that pedestal just by nature of what he does and the knowledge that he has and the ship that he has and his ability to change his face and so on. But I think there was at least a realism to him before, that he was just a guy, you know, and left, and maybe he's just a guy that, you know, like, you could go to school, you could get educated to learn science and do these things here in your own backyard rather than travel out to other planets, you know. And the same kind of thing with Susan. They brought in a kind of like a telepathic nature to her, and that's okay. You know, I don't really think that's too far off the board. But once you make her be something grander than a human or a Gallifreyan, that are just normal people, I think you start to lose us. And I think the new series learned that lesson a lot, you know, once they started making all the companions basically be grander than the normal human that they were meant to be to relate to the audience.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's also interesting to see that, you know, we kind of think these days that Moffat and Russell T Davies, they're the only guys that have played with Doctor Who in a sort of fictional sense, spinning ideas away from the TV show. But that's not the case, because, you know, Eric Saud was doing it, Terence Dix was doing it in the 70s, Terry Nation did it. I know he wasn't a showrunner, but, you know, he had a big part in overseeing the Dalek stories that he didn't write, and wrote a lot of the Dalek stories. So, yeah, they've all done it. So,
Well, and of course, Cartmell.
Yeah,
I mean, I understand why people would think that way. And there are plenty of times that you can get some grand stories out of that. But I think, you know, some of them are a point of no return type situation. You know, like, would this be a great story to tell? Yeah, probably it would be a great story to tell. But where do you go from there? You know, you can only go up. You know, the Doctor now, it would be this grand. They already made him in the new series that kind of lonely god thing, as they said. And I always loved the Doctor more when basically he would land on a planet. Yeah. And people didn't know who he was, you know. And it was also great when he would land on a planet. People didn't know who he was. He got in trouble because they thought he was the bad guy. And then the Daleks show up and they think, OK, well, we got a bigger problem. And then the Daleks know the Doctor. And then they're like, whoa, maybe you're still a problem. These guys know you. Like, those things are great, you know. But instead he comes in, and I got to tell you, like, so many new series episodes, and I know it started with Moffat, Russell, but it carried on into Moffat, and it really just became extremely old, you know, carrying on into season 8, you know, essentially. When the Doctor lands and somebody, like, basically is fangirl or fanboying over the Doctor, you know, like, oh my god, it really is bigger on the inside. Oh, I read all the case files on you. I know all of this. And Osgood is a good example of that. It's just like, you know, maybe once I can see as a fun thing, somebody who knows him, kind of like how Malcolm was, you know, I can get like, okay, you work for UNIT, you read the case files. I could probably even get Osgood in that sense. But traveling the universe and having the Doctor constantly run into people that know him, and I get he's out there, and I get he's traveled through many times and so on, but I don't know. There's just something about that where he is this godlike entity that everybody looks up to and knows about somehow, and it feels wrong in many ways. It feels, once again, unrelatable.
Yeah, it's kind of gone beyond cliche. We might have called it a trope, but it has kind of transcended cliche itself now, I think. That whole fan of the Doctor. There was one in beneath the After the Flood and Beneath the Sea, or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was one of the ones. Yeah. Oh, was that 9? That was 9. You're right. Jeez. God. Yeah, it went all the way in the 9.
And
okay.
I mean, I was thinking of that one as well, because that is an episode that, because we were talking about Andrew Campbell before, it is an episode that feels quite Seventh Doctor-y, especially the second part of it. And when we meet the alien, and he knows who the Doctor is. He knows the Doctor's a Time Lord.
Yeah,
we're about to call him the Doctor Time Lord. And you know, then you're thinking, oh, you're going back to the Caves of Fear and stuff, aren't you? And you know,
kind of
out of itself. I mean, is that good writing? Is that bad writing? Is that sloppy writing? Is it does it need to be so knowing?
Well, you know, they focus on the storytelling differently. They focus more so on the people and the individuals now. It's the drama rather than the danger, rather than the threat. So it seems like the threats are always secondary, and it's like rather than waste pages of dialogue of the Doctor and the alien having to kind of get to know who each other are. You know, you can no longer, for the most part, rarely happens anyway, you can no longer do stories where the Doctor doesn't know the alien race, or the alien race doesn't know the Doctor, because that would be too much time away from your drama, your heartfelt issues, you know, the heartache they want you to feel. And in many ways, that's sad, because one of the things that I love about TV over film is that TV gives us the ability to tell or watch a more diverse range of stories. So rather than every week the whole universe being in danger, because when you have only three movies to tell, your three stories are going to be the whole universe is in danger. Every week on a TV show should be, you know, one week the universe is in danger, the next week one small human is in danger, maybe just a village or some alien planet. You know, you have these different stories to tell. You can tell comedy, you can tell serious, you can tell tragedy. You know, there's such an interesting range that TV can get away with that film just can't. And it seems like Doctor Who is just stuck in a rut where they just want to tell the same kind of story. And in order to do that, they sacrifice all of the good bits that would make diverse storytelling. And then they, you know, unfortunately get people like us sitting here saying, like, you know, they really need to change things up. They need a new format, when all they really need to do is just change a couple of aspects, and their current format could work if I've spoken
at least twice before, so this is going to be a third time that we don't get the focus on the villains that we used to get in the classic era. When was the last time a companion was tempted by a villain, either sexually or financially, or with the prospect of power? You know, all of those things happen to companions in the past, and it doesn't happen now. We don't have that focus on the villain. There's a hell of a lot of drama if you switch the focus from the Doctor and companion to the villain. What the villain's doing, you find yourself, I mean, how many times in the old series do we find ourselves cheering, not so much cheering for the villain, but sort of like really, really, really enjoying the villain? Partly because they've got a good performance, partly because, you know, this thing like Solon. Or there's Davros, the original Davros. And when Davros does come back along, you know, you do kind of find yourself, oh, it's Davros, and you're kind of on his side a little bit, because you want to know whether he really has sort of like given up the Daleks or whatever, like a bad habit or whatever. Same with the Master, but it's only Davros and the Master who get that treatment now, obviously. And you know, in the classic series, there'd be so much focus put on the bad guys. The guy from the Seeds of Doom, Harrison Chase. There's two of them, really, in the Seas of Doom, because there's Harrison Chase and there's Scorby. Go to Inferno, you've got the Lunatic Starman. Go to any number of those classic series episodes, and you've got those compelling villains, and Doctor Who just doesn't do that anymore.
I was just going to say, it's funny that you're going through all those classic stories and just rattling off these names, because
you can't
do that with the new series. Yeah, I mean, I can only think of Solomon, which was in a terrible story, which was in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. He was the only one that, you know, was semi-interesting, you know, and even then, and it was kind of like what you were saying. You had that temptation kind of thing, but you didn't really get like a full-on temptation, because it was the guy trying to kind of seduce the Doctor in a way. But it gave Matt Smith one of his most brilliant moments, in my opinion, which unfortunately was just in a really kind of poor story. But you're right that, you know, they need to do something to break away from this Doctor companion bond that is always the focus every week. And you just you won't get Darth Vader's. You know, you won't get a character that when they show up anymore, you just sit there and you're like, oh crap, it's Darth Vader this week. Awesome. You know, like Davros shows up in series 9. And you kind of had that feeling, but he was set up in the classic series. You know, Missy or the Master shows up, but they were set up in the classic series. What was the last new series creature, alien, villain that was created that came multiple times in the show that made us feel that way? Because I can't even think of one. You know, and it's sad. And I know we spoke a few times about how the Sycorax should come back and kind of show us what they are and what they can do. And they just don't do it. You know, the only times that they came back, they were background dressing, you know, and even then, you know, that's a race and not just a single alien. They didn't even create like a human threat like Chase, you know, that was working with some kind of alien that would make us want to see that person again. I mean, think back to the Runaway Bride, you know, like wouldn't necessarily want to see the Rachnos again, but we should have wanted to see, God, I can't even remember his name, Donna's husband to be at that point. You know, they should have made him instead of just some whacked out loser. Somebody interesting, somebody who had a plan, somebody who was using the Rachnos as much as she was using him, you know, and then we could have seen them maybe come back with another alien threat.
I think this is one of the reasons I like Lazarus Experiment, because it does have more of a focus on a new villain and relationships with the Doctor's companion and the companion's sister and whatever. You've got that going on there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, for some reason, don't particularly like the Lazarus Experiment. I don't really know why.
No, I don't get that either. I get maybe not liking the CGI of the creature, because that was a bit of a letdown. But, yeah. No, but story-wise, I agree. The story was great, and Mark Gatiss played a really good character through and through, all the way to the end, I felt. But the difference is, well, I guess I shouldn't say the difference is, because Chase was also like a one-off kind of villain kind of guy like that. So, yeah, no, I think that was definitely a good example. I guess where I'm going with this is it's not a Davros. You know, if Lazarus were to show up again, you wouldn't kind of have that feeling. But at least that story focused on a different meat of the story rather than companion or doctor. So that's a fair point. That's definitely a good one. I'm trying very hard to think of another one that may have done it.
No, there's been some good casting for villains, but, you know, Stephen Berkoff was in the Pirate 3, wasn't he? He was a Bond villain in Octopussy.
Which is, to me, a completely completely forgettable story. I don't remember anything about that story, you know, aside from that cubes fell and
fell,
it got
and
resolved.
Then Stephen Berkoff was a computer program, and that was about it. Yeah, very, very, very weird. Yeah. So that's that, really, listener. This is something that we've kind of touched upon before, but do tell us what you think about this whole side of what Doctor Who is doing. Is it time to move away from the Doctor-Companion relationship? If you've somehow stumbled upon us without knowing anything about us, welcome, for a start off. Bit late in the podcast, I know. But you can get in touch with us. If you're listening on Audio Boom, you can respond to us by recording your own little boo, as they used to call them. And we can listen to that. You can also get in touch with us on Facebook. The Facebook address escapes my immediate recollection. It's www.facebook.com/podcasterberus. That's the thing I couldn't change after I'd done it. Email address I just couldn't be bothered changing, but if you want to get in touch with us via email, it is podcasterberus@gmail.com. We're on Twitter as well, aren't we, Brian?
Yes.
And the address there is at podcast with a K. Our name is the podcast with a K. And you can also find us at www.thepodcast.co.uk. And we're on iTunes as well. You might have found us there. But yeah, do get in touch with us, because we are intrigued to know where your thoughts lie with this. And thanks for everyone who's commented on stuff over the past few weeks. On Facebook, our commentaries that we've been doing. We've got some more commentaries lined up. You will be fascinated and enthralled and thrilled to know, dear listener. Especially if you're dying to hear the dulcet tones of James McLean, or the Welsh tones of Gareth Kavanagh, which he hides it very well. We have got one planned for next week, so that might be good. It might be the week after; it depends on schedules. But what have we got planned? I seem to have forgotten what it was we chose. It's the Sunmakers, isn't it?
I was just going to say, do you need me? Okay, go on.
It was the filmmaking, wasn't it, that we were talking about doing next? Yes, it was. Yes.
Yes.
We'll see how that goes. I think there's a slightly satirical reason for picking that. If you're in the UK, then you probably realise what that is already. One piece of news that we've forgotten to talk about, and that is the revival of a Unbound Doctor. You did not hear this news?
I did not hear this news.
This is...
No, I didn't. Which?
The return of David Warner.
David Warner, Doctor, I hope. Yeah. Is it David Warner?
He's appearing in The Good. Adventures of Bernie Summerfield, Volume 3. Yeah.
Really?
As the
as his Doctor, Unbound yeah. Doctor? Wow. That's pretty cool. I always wanted them to do more of a series with him. His two stories were great. The first one was phenomenal. Second one was great. But he was just a dynamite doctor.
Sam Kisgaard is back as the Master.
Sam Kisgaard?
It's an anagram. Yeah.
Oh, right. I was going to say, duh. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Really? Yeah. So he's even coming back. Wow. I wonder how they're going to handle that. I wonder if that's going to be like an alternate universe Bernice, or if somehow they're crossing into her actual range from an alternate universe.
Yeah, it's out in August, so we'll be able to talk about it more when that comes around.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's quite exciting and interesting. So we'll leave it there, podcasterite. Thank you for joining Brian and I this week. We're hoping to be back with a commentary in the near future. If not, then we'll do more of this kind of random rambling, I suppose.
Random rambling.
If you're up for that, Brian?
Oh, yeah, always up for rambling, especially randomly.
And if you're up for it as well, dear listener. Until then, it's goodbye.